Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a leading online community for family caregivers. Thank you for tuning in. I'd like to remind everyone that you can listen to any of our past shows on eCareDiary.com by clicking our blog tab. We encourage you to sign up for our free newsletter to learn about our upcoming shows. So this is a very special month. November is National Family Caregivers Month, and we are honoring all family caregivers out there. This week is a special week in particular. The services and advocacy for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender elders, otherwise known as SAGE, is holding its national conference here in New York City. And we are devoting today's show to the LGBT community of caregivers with a very special guest. I am very pleased to introduce Courtney Long, who is the founder of LGBT Caring Warriors, a division of Caring for Your Spirit. She is also the author of Rejuvenating Refuge, Uplifting Journal for Caring Warriors. LGBT Caring Warriors is a company that emphasizes self-care, enabling people to be better caregivers, and focuses on the unique needs of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Courtney is a transformational life coach, a certified hypnotherapist, and geriatric social worker. Her book, Rejuvenating Refuge, Uplifting Journal for Caring Warriors, is a guided journal aimed at helping people start the process of tender, loving self-care. Well, there's a concept. She is a faculty member at the Southwest Institute of Healing Arts in Arizona and is well known for her one-on-one care sessions, online support groups, inspirational workshops, and teleclasses to empower caregivers all over the world. Courtney, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just honored to be here.
Well, so let's start and tell us about LGBT Caring Warriors. What is a caring warrior?
That's such a good question. I really see a caring warrior as someone who's very giving and compassionate and tends to put everyone else's needs ahead of their own. So many of them are family caregivers, helping professionals, healthcare professionals, parents, even just people who just have that giving, caring spirit. And I consider them warriors because it takes a lot of strength and courage to care for others and to advocate for their needs. And it's not always easy, it's a big job. And I really believe also that as caring warriors, we need so much self-care. And it takes courage to sometimes say no to certain requests or to others in order to take good care of ourselves and to set that time aside for ourselves.
And I couldn't agree with you more that it takes a lot of courage. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
And it also just takes courage to embrace who we really are. I just see so many giving people who just focus on others, and sometimes it takes courage to look within and discover the beauty within ourselves as well.
Absolutely. Courage is absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Now, a majority of your clients are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, and we'll use the acronym LGBT. What would you say are the special issues or major concerns that face LGBT baby boomers and seniors?
That's such a good question also. And there are so many, so I'm just going to highlight some of the major ones, I would say. And I also just want to mention that I am stationed in Phoenix, Arizona, and here we have a group that's called LGBT Boomers and Beyond. And I've just been fortunate to work with this group. A lot of great organizations form it, and just have really helped me to have even more insight into some of the issues that LGBT boomers and seniors face. But I think one of the biggest ones is social isolation. And LGBT elders are actually, they're more than twice as likely as heterosexual elders to live alone. So about two-thirds of them are found to have no partner or to live alone. and about 80% of them have no children. You know, and whereas in a lot of family systems, the children are the ones who provide care for the elders. So then it's just, it's, you see a lot of people also estranged from family members, maybe other family members who didn't accept that they were gay, and so just a lot of social isolation. And one thing that I've seen that I think amazing in our community is just people developing what they call a family of choice. So, you know, choosing friends, community members, people who aren't necessarily family, but people who can still be a source of support. So that's definitely one of them. And another issue is you see a lot of boomers and seniors in the LGBT community afraid to be out. And it hasn't even been that long in our country's history since Stonewall that that it's been okay in some areas to be out and to be proud of who we are. And a lot of LGBT seniors will actually tend to go back in the closet. You know, after they've been out, they might tend to go back in the closet when they're seeking services, maybe if they see a doctor, not necessarily comfortable telling the doctor that they're gay. And a lot of, I'd say just insensitivity in healthcare arenas, unfortunately, a lot of lack of awareness, lack of sensitivity, even sometimes outright discrimination. People not understanding, or, you know, people who have their own negative feelings toward LGBT folk or not understanding it, just kind of project that negativity onto their clients, their patients. So we see some people that actually don't even seek services because they're afraid of how they'll be treated. And there's even some healthcare facilities or, say, long-term care facilities that won't allow same-sex partners to live in the same unit. So say in an assisted living, for example, they might say, oh, the policy is if two people live in the same room, they have to be opposite genders, which is tricky because what if even two sisters want to live together, you know?
Sure.
But the tricky thing is, I think a lot of this discrimination is not outright. You know, if you're not really looking at the subtle cues, you might not see it. But policies like that can really keep people from just not seeking services. Or there's also not that much housing available that's LGBT friendly. And thankfully, there's a need for it, and people are starting to provide it. But we just need a lot more housing that where people openly affirm, you know, we are an inclusive environment. We are friendly to those who are LGBT. And it doesn't mean the whole facility has to be all LGBT folk, but just that the staff and the residents or the clients that come would be, you know, open, affirming, just supportive, and be allies.
Sure.
So, yeah, and so just, you know, with all of this, I think there can be a lot of depression, anxiety in the LGBT community and just people kind of keeping to themselves. So
let's, this is really, I mean, unfortunate yet fascinating that, you know, despite, you know, the times that we live in, that, I mean, unfortunately, discrimination is still very prevalent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned Stonewall, and I just would appreciate for just, I think, a second or two if you could just clarify what that particular event means to the LGBT community. I think that was the beginning of really, well, you can describe it better than I can, I guess.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Stonewall.
Because you know you made a reference to it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was the Stonewall riots, actually, that and it happened in 1969. At the Stonewall Inn, and it was in New York City. And there was, I mean, at that time, I think a lot of places and just places in the community where gay people would tend to congregate, they would be raided by police, and there would just be all kinds of raids and breaking the gathering apart because people were gay, whatever it was. So this was actually the first time that gay people stood up for themselves and basically said, no, you know, you're not going to arrest us or abuse us or whatever it is. We're standing up for ourselves. So it's basically it's a huge marker of the gay rights movement and just gay pride, just feeling good about who we are and standing in that power.
No, I really appreciate your clarifying that, Courtney, because I think just to for those out there who are not aware of what the significance of Stonewall is, I just wanted to clarify that. So let's go back now. Let's talk about, now you talked about the issues that LGBT elders, baby boomers, and seniors face. Let's talk about the specific issues that LGBT caregivers face.
Yeah, definitely. Great question. And I say, I mean, like any caregivers, tons of stress, right?
So much.
And then an additional stressor is not having that many people to turn to. So, again, kind of that sense of isolation or maybe lack of family connections. So just being the sole caregiver. And a lot of LGBT folk will be designated as the caregiver in the family because maybe they don't have children or maybe other family members don't necessarily validate their relationship. So they might just kind of, well, you know, you don't have kids to care for or grandkids, so here you go. You can care for mom or dad, which is fine. It's just we see a, you know, a huge discrepancy there. A lot of LGBT folk are automatically take on that role. And then, again, just that kind of lack of sensitivity in the healthcare settings. And then unequal rights in terms of programs, laws, and services. So, I mean, for LGBT people, it's so important to have the long-term planning in place, the medical power of attorney, because even hospital visitation, you know, without a medical power of attorney, the same-sex partner isn't necessarily allowed that the hospital rights or rights to a person's estate or to their social security disability or their pensions, whatnot. Those things just aren't automatic, retirement accounts. So it's really important to have long-term planning in place.
So the advanced directives are really very key for LGBT caregivers.
Yeah, absolutely. So key. And unfortunately, even with the advanced directives, I mean, there's certain things that still, you know, don't hold up, but for the most part, at least that helps in the healthcare arena, you know, with the medical decision making. Definitely.
Well,
and then I think
you.
Another challenge for caregivers is that spirituality tends to be a really key coping mechanism for a lot of caregivers. And for many LGBT folk, they've been estranged from their religious organizations or, you know, told that they're sinful, whatever it is. So, you know, maybe that spirituality isn't as easy of a coping mechanism for them.
Well, thank you for shedding light on this, Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some specific situations. What happens in those particular situations where caregivers might find themselves caring for a parent or a relative that might not have accepted them for being gay? How do you help caregivers through those types of challenges?
Good question. It can be such a tricky situation. And I think for anyone that's caring for a parent where they've had some, you know, really tumultuous history with them or have maybe still some resentment or anger toward them. And so one way that I really help caregivers in this situation is to be able to release that anger and resentment and basically heal what has happened in the past so that they can be present in the now. And I just help them find ways to validate themselves and feel good about themselves and surround themselves with other people who are supportive and who validate them. And I really believe that if we accept ourselves deeply and completely, then it's not quite as hurtful when other people don't accept us. So, and it's just all about finding ways to appreciate the parent that they're caring for as they are now. So maybe finding ways that they relate and connect, you know, in other realms. Maybe they both really like to cook or can play Yahtzee together, or it's kind of depending on the caregiving situation. But just finding other ways to connect, and even if possible, just having an honest conversation about how hurtful it is that the parent didn't or doesn't accept the person's sexual orientation, and just see if they can find some common ground where maybe the parent could say, you know, well, I don't approve, or, you know, my religion says that this is wrong, I don't quite understand, but I still love you. I still respect you as a person. So trying to find that common ground. But again, I think this is a lot of what I teach and what I coach is just about accepting ourselves more than anything, because once we feel good about ourselves, then we can help others from a more powerful place.
I think that's very sound advice. Now, what do you say to healthcare professionals who are in our audience? What do they need to know? How can they be more sensitive to the needs of the LGBT community? You mentioned earlier, and I have actually been through a program where I learned quite a bit about discrimination within senior care provider services against the LGBT community. What is your message to the healthcare professionals out there?
Yeah, and I love that you have gone through that training. I think that's one of the biggest tips that I have is just to educate yourself and just to find out. I mean, a lot of these things, you know, if you're not in tune with the community, you might not even know, you know, that the discrimination is still in existence in these subtle ways and sometimes not so subtle ways. But just to educate yourself and attend trainings. And like you said, this week we're having this wonderful conference in New York City put on by SAGE, the Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. And there's also recently created a National Resource Center on LGBT Aging. So it's this wonderful, wonderful resource center, and it's at the web address is lgbtagingcenter.org. So that also has lots and lots of info. So it's lgbtagingcenter.org. And I think another tip would be to not just assume that someone is heterosexual. So, I mean, even myself, I get the question a lot, you know, so what does your husband do? And I say, well, my partner, this is what she does. And so just finding, I'd say, more gender-neutral language, such as saying, you know, do you have a significant other? Or is mm-hmm. there someone special in your life, rather than saying you have a husband or do you have a wife? And then many of the younger LGBT folk will use the word partner to describe their loved one, their significant other. Yet some in the older generation will still use the word friend or companion. They might not be as comfortable claiming that this is my significant other, so they'll use those terms. But just, you know, being just really, really sensitive and gender neutral, getting to know some LGBT elders and just taking an interest in their lives. Just, you know, they're just normal people. Yet maybe they've had different experiences that are important to learn about. And then realizing, too, that they may rely on their family of choice. So maybe when they're making an important healthcare decision, maybe they're going to want their partner there or a close friend who's in their family of choice, rather than their son or their daughter. So just thinking right. more creatively in terms of that. And I think, too, just finding ways to indicate that your organization is LGBT friendly. You know, if it's that you put a rainbow flag on your brochure or that you use words saying, you know, we're inclusive, we appreciate diversity, we're open and affirming. Just, you know, whatever it is. And even within an organization, including LGBT history, in history discussions or trivia, maybe even forming a gay-straight alliance at your senior center or, you know, within your organization, ways to be able to educate other people. Because it's not only about serving the LGBT community and LGBT elders, but it's also, I believe, about building bridges and creating more allies. So the heterosexual people out there who may be accepting and can be supportive and loving. And, we need each other and we need our allies.
These are phenomenal suggestions, Courtney. I think that if even, you know, one person comes out of this interview being able to implement these changes, I mean, I think it would be significant. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about your work now, your work as a transformational life coach. What is involved in being someone's life coach? It sounds like I need a life coach. Tell me more about it.
Well, I think we all need a life coach. And it's, you know, and I've heard it said that it's basically like having a personal trainer for your life and for your own
yes.
self. But I absolutely love it. I love what I do. And I try to surround my clients with just this huge, wonderful atmosphere of love and acceptance and support. And my job is to ask them thought-provoking, empowering questions that help them see past their own fears, their own limitations, and really connect with their inner wisdom. So I see my role as helping them to love and accept themselves and to be able to awaken that authentic self deep within us. And life coaching is really about looking at where someone is now and where they want to be. So setting realistic goals, you know, living our dreams, setting that big vision for the future, and just really connecting with their own strengths, their own empowerment, and being able to just propel them into the life that they really desire and deserve. It's so empowering. I love it. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, yes, that's fine. I also teach a lot of different techniques for stress relief and self-care and just all of these different ways that we can stay healthy and energized as we care for others. So that's another component of my life coaching.
Well, I love this, the fact that you're a huge advocate for self-care, because that's so, particularly in the world of caregiving, it's so critical. So tell us what you call tender, loving self-care.
Well, I love calling it tender, loving self-care. and I define it as delightful morsels of love that we give to ourselves for the betterment of the world. And the reason I say it's for the betterment of the world is I truly believe that when we fill our own cup, you know, when we take good care of ourselves, we're healthier, we're more energized, we have more positive energy, and we share that positive energy with others. So, of course, our loved ones benefit when we're feeling better. And I always say even strangers benefit, because if you're feeling good within yourself, you're more likely to hold the door open at the store for someone, or, you know, give someone a smile. So it's self-care, it can be so many different things. I think a lot of people think, well, gosh, you know, I don't have time to take a vacation, or can't leave my loved one for that long, or I don't have money to get a massage once a month. But it can be simple things. It can even be watching a sunset, or smelling flowers, or listening to good music, you know, having a great cup of tea. All of these little tiny things really add up, and they help to fill our cup.
And I'm glad you make that point, because it could be these little details that you do for yourself that could make a huge impact.
Yeah, now, absolutely.
So, Courtney, you're a caring warrior, quote-unquote, yourself, and I know that you care for your grandmother in Michigan, and you have a mother-in-law who suffers from dementia. Tell the caregivers out there, what do you do to help care for yourself?
Well, before I tell you exactly what I do, I'll tell you a little bit of how I do it. Because I admit that, like many other caring warriors, I tend to put my self-care on the back burner. Or I love helping other people, and I call myself a care-aholic. And so it's easy to keep ourselves so busy and kind of forget ourselves. So one tip that I love is scheduling the self-care in. So, you know, finding something that you love to do and actually putting it on the calendar and putting it as a high priority appointment. Or if you use a to-do list, which I do every day, I try to schedule something just for myself toward the top of the to-do list. It doesn't have to be the first thing, but it just has to be up there. And, you know, getting it done early in the day can really help too, so that you can't just kind of, you know, push it off to the side later in the day. but I love to be in nature. I think that's the thing that rejuvenates me the most. And I love hiking. Very fortunate to live in Phoenix. We've got lots of mountains to hike in. And
oh,
great,
you sure do.
Yes, it's so beautiful. And we have a fabulous desert botanical garden. So just places that I love to go outside and walk and just see the flowers, see the trees. I love it. And I also like to practice yoga. It just helps me be more connected to my body, more mindful, and take long baths. I love aromatherapy, smelling different scents, and I love massage, and also meditation and self-hypnosis.
I think so many people could learn from you. I think if anyone did just one of those things on a daily basis, I think that would be a huge leap in the right direction for so many of us. Tell us, you know, you created this journal called The Rejuvenating Refuge. Tell us what inspired you to do that.
Well, I think it's just that seeing so many people who give and give and don't have enough time for themselves, and just feeling so stressed so overwhelmed, so exhausted. And I really believe that in addition to needing, you know, the usual food, water, shelter, love that we need, we also need a place to rejuvenate, you know, a place that we can let go of our stress, our frustration, and just replenish our energy, you know, refuel our energy. So I created the journal to help caring people to be able to let go of that stress and that guilt and stop feeling guilty for not being perfect, not being able to do it all, and refuel our energy supply. So the journal has a lot of empowering questions on self-care and how to create fun in our lives. I see a lot of people who are fun deprived. And then how to evaluate our priorities, how to say no to some obligations so that we can say yes to the ones that are most meaningful to us, and all kinds of different stress relief tools like deep breathing, positive affirmations, creating mini vacations for yourself through visualization. And it even has a self-care permission slip so that people can sign one for themselves. And I say all the time, I'm happy to give permission slips from me to do self-care, but it really has to come, you know, from within, from each person to be able to give themselves permission to do nice things.
Oh, they sure do. They, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big thing. It's I think caregivers can often get into that role of feeling very guilty about taking care of themselves, and it's really, I think it's a very smart idea to do the caregiver self-permission slip.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
And I think, too, just realizing that when we do take care of ourselves, it's not just for us, it's really, I believe it's for everybody, because then we can provide better care for our loved ones, or, you know, we're in a much better mood when we're around them. And I'm sure they like that very much.
Now, Courtney, tell us now, you've embraced technology to offer resources for LGBT caring warriors, including teleclasses, and you have these great Facebook pages and lots more. I've actually listened to a couple of your teleclasses, and they are wonderful, and I think in one of them you are actually, I think, walking through the caregiver through positive affirmations, which I just found so calming and soothing. Can you please tell your audience where they can find them and learn more about your LGBT Caring Warriors?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for listening to the teleclasses and just being part of them. Just, I'm glad that you were able to, definitely. So I would say I have everything listed on my website, and there's two different ways to get to my website. One is www.caringforyourspirit.com. So it's all spelled out. caringforyourspirit.com or www.lgbtcaringwarriors.com. And so I have on there, under the workshops and presentations tab, there's all of the upcoming teleclasses. I do a whole teleclass series specifically for caregivers to empower them in self-care and stress relief, preparing for the holidays, you know, how to have stress-free holidays. And whatnot. And then I also do a whole series for LGBT folks, too, about self-empowerment, feeling good about who we are, and discovering our authentic selves and whatnot. And so those are listed on there. And then also there's a tab on my website for audios from past teleclasses. So you can listen to those there. And then I also, like Susan said, have some really active Facebook pages. One is under Facebook. It's under Caring for Your Spirit. And the other one is under LGBT Caring Warriors. And I just try to use those as a way to educate on self-care and give a little bit of inspiration for feeling good about ourselves and feeling energized and healthy. And it's wonderful to have that forum because I love being able to interact back and forth.
Oh, it's great. It's a great forum. You have a lot of engaged members on those forums, so it's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And then
Go ahead. Sorry.
I also moderate a online, the Lesbian, Bi, and Trans for Females Caregiver Support Group. It's run through the Mottner Project in Washington, D.C., so that's also available, too.
Can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, it's an online Lesbian, Bi, and Trans Caregiver Support Group, and it's through the Mottner Project, which is M-A-U-T-N-E-R, in Washington, D.C., And it's through Yahoo Group. So if you go to Yahoo Group, I believe it's group.yahoo.com, and then you can search for the actual name of the group is Lesbian Caregivers.
Terrific.
And it's just a great forum to be able to support one another. And I know the Family Caregiver Alliance also has a really active online support group for LGBT folks, too. So that one's more inclusive of males. The one that I moderate is specifically for females.
Terrific. Courtney, I really enjoyed having you on our show today, and I would love for you to share what you call one of your favorite quotes. I heard it on one of your teleclasses, and I think it's such a perfect way to end our wonderful discussion today. Would you mind sharing it with our audience?
Yeah, I would be happy to. Absolutely. And I invite, as you listen, I just invite everyone to really feel the truth of these words. So if you're busy doing something else, maybe stop and pause, maybe even close your eyes. Just feel this. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. And we are born to make manifest the glory of the universe that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And that is by Marianne Williamson in her book, Return to Love.
Oh, that is just a wonderful, wonderful quote. Thank you, Courtney. It has been a wonderful pleasure having you as our guest today, and I'd love to have you back on the show. You can learn more about Courtney Long on www.caringforyourspirit.com or www.lgbtcaringwarriors.com. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in. Join us next time on Monday, November 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern when I will be interviewing Jacqueline Marcel, author of Elder Rage, a Book of the Month Club selection. She is also the host of the radio show Coping with Caregiving, and she's an elder care advocate and international speaker. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, visit ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is eCareDiarySusan. Do you have a Twitter address, Courtney?
I do. It's Caring for Your Spirit, and it's caring, and then the number four, then YR Spirit. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you again, Courtney, and thank you to our audience. Until next time.
Thank you so much, Susan.